Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The World Health Organization says the rate of maternal mortality is unacceptably high. The United States is one of only 13 countries in the world where the rate of maternal mortality is now worse than it was 25 years ago. Dr. Menachem Miodavnik is a perinatologist who works in the area of maternal health. He's giving the Ethel Austin Martin Distinguished Lecture at SDSU this evening. That's at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. It's free, it's open to the public, and it's there in the University Student Union. Dr. Miodavnik joins us now on the phone from Brookings. Welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I feel like we should define maternal mortality to get the parameters of it. Is it just women dying during childbirth, or does it count women who die in the months after childbirth?
Right. It's within the 42 days after delivery and up to 1 year after delivery. Mm-hmm. And it's associated with pregnancy directly or other reason that caused maternal death.
This is one of those things that you feel should have gone away by now, and yet you're calling it a global crisis.
I do, and I think it's crisis globally and actually also in our country, the U.S. And let me give you some perspective. There are 139 million births annually in the world, 289,000 maternal mortality. Mean women dying at birth. And that means 800 a day. That means 2 every minute. So I think it's really a problem. In the United States, we have 800 maternal deaths every year. And again, let me put it in perspective. This is 4 airplanes full with women down every year. And we don't talk about it enough. Or we don't pay attention to that enough.
Hmm. Are there a wide variety of causes for this? Is it different in America than it would be, you know, in a country with fewer resources? What's behind some of those numbers?
Well, first of all, the numbers outside the United States actually are 14 times higher. But still, in the United States, we have about 24 deaths. Maternal death every 100,000 delivery, which is really high. The causes are starting with chronic illness. We let now women with severe diabetes get pregnant. The age is now much higher. Women delay their pregnancy. We have much higher obesity rate, which is growing. Obesity is associated again with diabetes. We have a lot of unintended pregnancy in the country. And so women do not plan their pregnancy, and so they found themselves during pregnancy with no plans. In addition, many women in the country do not yet get first trimester care. Some of them are getting to the third trimester and only then enrolled in care, and some of them don't have care at all. So it's a problem when they arrive to labor and delivery with all complications that might happen. And then there are quite a lot of women that are completely healthy and, things happen in labor and delivery and you can be a completely normal and end up having complications. So that's what's happening now.
So some of those things are changing as Americans change. You mentioned the obesity rate.
Yes.
Or are the rates of unintended pregnancies going up?
It's up 45%.
Really?
Which is a huge number globally and in the United States. I think that we don't let women have a contraceptive as they desire and they need to prevent this unintended pregnancy, because a lot of the unintended pregnancy will end in abortion, and abortion have their own risk of complication. And so globally there are many women, I think about 47,000, I'm not talking about the U.S., that die because of complication of abortion. So this is a huge problem,
isn't it? In the U.S., is there a disparity between women of color and white women, or urban women and rural women, or where are we seeing some of the divisions within American?
We see a big difference between black and Caucasians. We see a big difference here in South Dakota between American Indians. Their risks for complication and death is much higher than a Caucasian is. So there's a big difference, big disparity between races in this country.
What's the message that you're bringing with this lecture? You know, the statistics are startling, so that will be one thing for people to just understand that it's a problem. And then what?
Well, I think first we need to learn where the problem lies. I think that we need more money to identify where we at these problems and where can we improve the problems. So like in Ohio, they started to collect data in related to maternal mortalities. In New York and in California, they have review committees that discuss every mortality of a woman in labor. So you're learning from that what happened and project it to the future and how to prevent this from happening.
The tennis player Serena Williams made news recently after the birth of her child, where she came out and really talked also about the notion that doctors ignored some of the things that at first she knew was happening. What's your message to women and their partners as they sort of go into a pregnancy and labor? What can women do to sort of address problems that maybe are manageable to them, not policy-wide, but just individual problems?
Well, first, I'm going to talk about the Serena Williams experience. And I think that from her experience, the providers need to learn to listen to the patients. As you know, she was experienced in the past. She had venous thrombosis, not in pregnancy. But then after the delivery, she felt that something is wrong, and she felt that she might have another pulmonary emboli. And she was asking the nurse to have a CT scan to diagnose if she indeed have it or not. And the nurse told her, no, it's because of the drugs that you are receiving. And they didn't do the test in the beginning. And then in the end, they sent her to CT scan and really identify that she did have what she said. So for the provider, listen to your patients and just don't ignore complaints that might look to you as something obvious, but it's not. And something underlying can cause other, more problems in later. So this is one of the messages, I think, most important. And then ask questions to the patients and to the husband. Ask questions. Don't accept just that somebody has decided to do something. Ask why, ask when. Be involved in the quick care, not just come with your wife, but ask questions on her behalf if you think that questions should be asked.
Should women be concerned about things like an increase in age or, an obesity, or, a pregnancy during obesity? Should they avoid a pregnancy at a certain time, or are there just different ways to sort of navigate your health care if that is part of your story?
So this brings us to another thing. I think that these women that have a chronic disease or obesity or other issues should come before pregnancy in the preconceptional period. So there are programs for obese women how to lose weight. There is some program with exercise and diet that can prevent excessive weight gain during pregnancy. Usually if you gain this weight, you stay with this weight, and the long-term complications for this woman is tremendous. So I think preconceptional care will be important to diabetics. They should start the pregnancy in good control and avoid complication of diabetes or high blood glucose that causes malformation in the baby in much higher rate than in the general population. So preconceptional, as I said, is really very important.
And for that, women have to have access to the health care.
Absolutely. Right. They need mm-hmm. to have access. And I don't think that many insurances are paying for preconceptional care. It's a problem. We had a big program in Cincinnati when I was there. And the mortality rate for mothers was zero. We had about 600 deliveries of type 1 diabetes. That means that it's you have no insulin at all, and all the insulin you're getting from injections. So, and we got up to 40% preconception rate, and so achieved very good control in this mother. And our malformation rate, that usually is about 8% in diabetic women, went down to the population numbers, which is 2%. So that just show you how important it to come before pregnancy, whether you have a problem, that your provider can help you to take care of.
When we look at worldwide statistics and you know, the World Health Organization or other leaders in this area make goals, what are we shooting for? Zero, well, is that possible? Like how many of these deaths could be prevented?
Well, they can if we have good programs. The goal for, actually they met in the United, the WHO in 2015, and the goal is for 2030 to go down to 50 per 100. 1,000 births, which is a tremendous reduction. In the United States for 2020, the goal was down from about 24 per 100,000 to about 11, so almost half of the death. So there are many ways. I'll give you another one example. Like in Illinois, there was just a study presented a month ago showing that patient that come with high blood pressure to labor and delivery, you need to reduce the blood pressure right away. And the program was to reduce the blood pressure in 1 hour after arrival to the hospital. And they achieved 75% improvement in the treatment for these women with hypertension. So we can do a lot of things to improve. There is a program in California that have protocols that I adjusted. It's not a protocol for the entire county, but protocols that are adjusted to the local hospitals, how to prevent postpartum hemorrhage. That is one of the problems in causing death, hemorrhage. So if you are on top of things, you can prevent maternal death due to hemorrhage. Mm-hmm. And this is a major problem globally and in the United States also.
So if the goal in the U.S. by 2020 is to reduce to that number, 11 per 100,000, we're headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, we are, but that's our goal. So hopefully we'll see decline. In fact, Texas is now sky high, and it's really a big crisis in the state of Texas. Maternal mortality goes high. And they attribute it to a close of many services that used to be before allowed women to seek care. The problem is that a lot of rural areas have problems. There's a study that shows actually mortality rate for mothers in rural areas increased compared to the cities. So there are many things that we can do to improve care and to reduce maternal death.
So much has been written about cesarean sections. Is there research that supports, the role of cesarean in maternal mortality?
Of course, every surgery is a big event and can cause complication, and of course can cause death from infection, from hemorrhage, and other reasons, pulmonary emboli, and other reasons. You know that currently the C-section rate in the United States is about 32%. And it's actually one of my slides showing who knows where it's going to go, but I hope that with programs that will be developed, we can reduce the C-section rate. We can increase the VBAC, which is the vaginal birth after cesarean section, if it's appropriate and approved by the obstetrician. So we can reduce the numbers of C-section in the country, and of course we also can then reduce complication and death.
Right. Was there a time when we were, getting ahead of this problem, and then we took some wrong steps, or what do you see, looking at the past, 10 years or 20 years, that we need to really think hard about as we look at policy for today?
Well, I'll give you an example. Years ago, when a physician walked to a postpartum floor, they didn't think that washing their hands is important to prevent infection. So the time, I don't remember exactly when it was, but quite some time ago, that it was found that if you wash your hand, you decrease tremendously the infection rate in these women. So these are the things that we need to look for, again, to avoid a complication that can easily be avoided.
Dr. Menachem Miodavnik is a perinatologist. He works in the area of maternal health, and he's giving the Ethel Austin Martin Distinguished Lecture at SDSU this evening. That's at 5:30. It's free. It's open to the public. It's at the University Student Union. Doctor, thank you so much. Really compelling conversation. We appreciate
your
time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.